पार्थाय प्रतिबोधिताम् भगवताम् नारायणेन स्वयं व्यासेन ग्रथिताम् पुराणमुनिना मध्ये महाभारतम् अद्वैतामृतवर्षिणी भगवती अष्टादशाध्यायिनी अम्ब त्वामनुसन्दधामि भगवद्गीते भवद्वेषिणी नमोऽस्तु ते व्यासविशालबुद्धे पुल्लारविन्दाय तपत्रनेत्र येन त्वया भारततैलपूर्णः प्रज्वालितो ज्ञानमयप्रदीपः प्रपन्नपारिजाताय स्तोत्रवेत्रैकपानये ज्ञानमुद्राय कृष्णाय गीतामृतदुहे नमः सर्वोपनिषदो गावो दोग्धा गोपालनन्दनः पार्थो वत्सुधी भोक्ता दुग्धं गीतामृतं महत् वसुदेवसुतं देवं कं स चानूरमर्दनं देवकी परमानन्दं कृष्णं वन्दे जगद्गुरुं भीष्मद्रोणतटः जयद्रथजला गान्धारनीलोत्पला शल्यग्राहवती कृपेण वहनी कर्णेन वेलाकुला अश्वत्थामविकर्णघोरमकरा दुर्योधनावर्तिनी सोधीर्णा खलु पाण्डवैरणनदी कैवर्तकेशवः पाराशर्यवचस्तरोजममलम् गीतार्थगन्धोत्कटम् नानाख्यानकेसरम् हरिकथा सम्बोधनाबोधितम् लोके सज्जनषट्पदैरहरः पेपीयमानम् मुदा भूयाद्भारतपङ्कजम् कलिमल प्रध्वंसि न श्रेयसे मूकम् करोति वाचालम् पङ्गुम् लङ्घयते गिरिम् यत्कृपातमहम् वन्दे परमानन्दमाधवम् यम् ब्रह्मा वरुणेन्द्ररुद्रमरुतः तुन्वन्ति दिव्यैस्तवै वेदैः साङ्गपदक्रमोपनिषदैः गायन्ति यम् सामगा ध्यानावस्थिततद्गतेन मनसा पश्यन्ति यम् योगिनः यस्यान्तम् न विदुःसुरासुरगणाः देवाय तस्मै नमः சதாசிவசமாரம்பாம் சங்கராச்சாரியமத்யமாம் அஸ்மதாச்சாரியபர்யந்தாம் வந்தே குரு பரம்பராம். ஓம் டுடே we will be actually be I'm going to use a slightly different format. First 45 minutes or so, let me do the usual the verses of Chaturthodhyayaha. I will continue, and I have received questions from people, and most of them are pertaining to a particular topic which is covered in Introduction to Vedanta called Shariratrayam, Sukshma Shariram, Karana Shariram, etc. So I thought, why not spend 15 to 20 minutes after the main part of the Chaturthodhyayaha is completed, I will spend some time in trying to quickly revise. Obviously, I may not be able to spend the same time that I did during Introduction to Vedanta, but it might be a nice revision, and also for people who did not attend the class, they will get a bird's eye view. Okay? So first we will get into the fourth chapter. So in the first 8 verses of the fourth chapter, which we just completed, Lord Krishna was dealing with the topic of Ishvara Avatara. To answer Arjuna's question, he also pointed out the various differences between Ishvara Avatara and Jiva Janma. The common factor being both Jiva and Ishvara are anadi or beginningless. I think this is also a place where people have got doubts. We will see once we cover Shariratrayam also, we will see if we can, revisit this particular area. Okay? And both Ishvara as well as Jiva take on bodies, but it is Ishvaras which we refer to as Avataram, and we saw the difference between Jiva Janma and Ishvara Avatara. Now, one question directly pertaining to this that people had, sent to me, one was, why does Ishvara wait for prayers to take Avatara as Ishvara knows everything? Okay? Now, it's like saying anyway Atma is everything, why are we all having samsara? We still have samsara, we get attached to the body and we are having day-to-day issues, right? Now, Ishvara is omniscient. He knows everything, but in the context of the reason for Ishvara Avatara, it is compassion towards the devotees, right? Which is a trigger for manifestation as an avatara. And also, as I said, to establish dharma, right? And out of compassion for the devotees. So in the Vyavaharika plane, we refer to it as the Vyavaharika plane, which means the normal way the Jiva, Ishvara, Jagat and all of this is there. As we proceed, we will understand how the Paramarthika plane is different from Vyavaharika plane. So in the Vyavaharika plane or Vyavaharika reality, there is Ishvara, there is Jiva and there is Jagat, and Ishvara takes avatara when there is a compassionate cry or request from a bhakta, right? And to establish dharma. Now, the other question that one or two people had asked me is, what is Atmanam Aham Srijami in the seventh shloka, right? So, what is the meaning of Atmanam here? I'm not going to get into too much of details, but it just means I manifest myself, right? And myself being the higher I, which is Atma or Brahman, right? It is Brahman manifesting with the help of Maya as Ishvara. That's the meaning if you're able to relate to it, that is Aham Srijami Atmanam, right? Okay, now we will proceed. So this is where we were. We were seeing the, we had just entered the ninth verse. Janma karma cha me divyam evam yo veti tattvatah tyaktva deham punarjanma naiti mameti sorjuna, right? So Krishna pointed out that by knowing the real nature of Ishvara, a person can attain liberation, right? So in the second chapter, Krishna had pointed out that self-realization will lead to liberation, and whereas here it was said that God realization will also lead to realization. So now what this means is essentially self-realization and God realization are one and the same, right? And we can make a very, very important corollary, which is self and God will have to be one and the same. The self is called the Jivatma and God is called the Paramatma. Jivatma and Paramatma are one and the same, and which is the main teaching of the Gita. For those of you who still remember the sessions that we did in Introduction to Vedanta, the only difference between Jivatma and Paramatma, if you remember the triangle that I drew, and then I showed the both sides of, you know, Vishva, Taijasa, Prajna, right? I put down the reflection of reflected consciousness in each of the Shariams. If you see, basically the difference between Jivatma and Paramatma is Atma or Brahman remaining the same, the Stula Sukshma Karana Prapancha and Stula Sukshma Karana Shariram, the reflecting medium is different. Therefore, because the reflecting medium is different, the qualities also are different. Exactly like a mirror reflects your image, and the image sharpness depends on the quality of the mirror itself, the medium, right? We will get into the details of this again today as we, you know, revise the Shariratraya, right? Now, when you study both Jivatma and Paramatma superficially, we will come to one general conclusion, right? On superficial study, what is that? Take for example, wave is small, right? Whereas ocean is very big, right? So, for some time, stay with me on this example, because this example is very, very important in terms of explaining this concept, right? Wave is small, whereas ocean is very, very big. Secondly, waves are plural in nature, whereas ocean is only one, right? So, one is Alpam and another is Mahan, and one is Anekam. There are many waves, whereas there is only one ocean, right? Thirdly, the wave is born out of the ocean, is sustained by the ocean, and wave will finally resolve into the ocean. Thus, the wave is a temporary product in the ocean, right? And in Sanskrit, this temporary product, we use a specific term called karyam, right? Whereas ocean is the regular producer of the wave, not one wave, every wave, right? In Sanskrit, we refer to this as karanam. This superficially seeing, these are the differences and the relationship. We discover one is small, another is big. One is pluralistic, other is single. One is effect and other is cause. This relationship is called karya karana sambandha, right? Whereas when you try to go a little deeper, okay, and find out what exactly is wave, right? We will understand that wave is nothing but a name given to the water itself. Wave is just a name given to the water itself. When the water has got a shape, a particular shape, then it is called wave. But in reality, there is no substance called wave. The shape is called wave, but there is no substance other than water that is called wave, right? very, very important. So the substance is water only. So essentially, wave is water. Similarly, when you try to analyze the nature of ocean, we will know, right? There is no such thing or substance called ocean. Ocean is nothing but a name given to what substance? Same water. The same water is named ocean when it is in the form of a huge accumulated reservoir. Thus, there is no substance called ocean, but there is, that is only water. Very important. Huh? This example actually helps in clarifying a lot of things. Therefore, wave is water, ocean is water. So, what is the relationship between wave and ocean? If someone asks, right, it is reworded as what is the relationship between water and wave or wave. What will you say? Wave is water, ocean is water. The answer should be, you cannot talk about a relationship between water and water because there are no two things at all. Both are essentially water. Our question itself is a wrong question, born out of non-enquiry with a superficial mind. So we ask this question, it's a superficial question, and we arrive at the wrong answer. So on inquiry, the question itself is wrong. Wave and ocean are not two things. There is only one water and therefore there is no relationship at all. We call this in Vedanta, Aikyam. Right? In Vedanta, this is called Aikyam. The Aikyam means they are not really two related things, but both are only one, right? Similarly, when we study Jivatma and Paramatma initially, with a superficial inquiry, we get an idea that Jivatma is small, like the wave, Paramatma is maha, huge, Jivatmas are many, Paramatma is one, Jivatma is a product, a created entity, and Paramatma is the creator. We conclude that our relationship is cause-effect relationship, creator-created creature relationship. Vedanta says, initially it is okay to think like that. Nothing wrong. You should inquire deeper. On deeper inquiry, you will find that Jivatma and Paramatma are two names given to one and the same basic substance called Atma. Right? The adjective Jiva and Parama, very important, belong to Nama and Rupa. They belong to the name and form only. If you remove the name and form, you arrive at the essence, Jivatma is Atma plus individual name and form, Paramatma is Atma plus total name and form. If you ignore the name and form, both are nothing but Atma. How many Atmas are there? It's like asking the question, how many waters are there? It's the same. Water is one. Therefore, the two words are to be removed and we replace it with a new word, Ekatma. So, for ignorant people, there are Jivatma and Paramatma. For a wise person, there is only Ekatma. Therefore, through self-realization, you arrive at Atma. God realization also, you arrive at Atma. Both lead to the same goal of Ekatman discovery, which is called Moksha. You can inquire into the ocean, you will arrive at water. You can inquire into a wave, you can arrive at water, right? The wise wave cannot and will not claim, I am a wave. The wise wave will claim, I am the water. Having discovered the truth that I am the water, the wise wave will declare, there is no wave as a substance, right? There is no ocean as a substance. I, the water alone, appear as wave also. I, the water alone, appear as ocean also. Wave and ocean are two appearances of one and the same water. Now extending this, Jnani also claims, I am the Ekatma, I alone appear as Jivatma, I appear as Paramatma also. Both are my own two versions. This is the ultimate Ekatma Darshanam or Moksha Karanam. Now, why is this Ekatma Darshanam important for human beings? Right? Very important question. This is important because according to Vedanta, this Ekatma alone is the only source of three fundamental things which every human being is knowingly or unknowingly hunting for. Right? What are those three fundamental things? Right? Now, we are unknowingly seeking or struggling throughout life, what, like when we enter school, UKG, pre-KG, LKG, there's a struggle for education, right? Then getting married, then trying to get children, then getting them married, working for their prosperity. So all human struggle are only for three fundamental things: security, peace, and happiness. Most fundamental is security, which we are struggling all the time, right? Now it can be increasing the bank account, increasing property, increasing gold. We can never catch up. And as we grow old, the sense of insecurity never comes down. It only increases. We want our children to be around us all the time, right? They may not want to be around us. That is a fact, because it will be generation after generation, it will continue, right? Now, they will never understand the need for the of the parents. When they come to that age, they will understand. But remember that you have already crossed that stage and gone, right? So youngsters will never understand the insecurity of the aged, right? So generation after generation, insecurity will only increase and it will never decrease. So Vedanta says, Atma is the only source of security. The second thing is peace. When the prarabdha karma is battering, the unpredictable, uncontrollable life constantly brings in several experiences, often shocking and unexpected experiences. It comes suddenly. It hits you. You never know, right? So, this knowledge alone is an emotional cushion. It's a great shock absorber, gets us ready to face anything in life, right? Very, very important. Right? Now, so it is security, it's peace and happiness. Now, happiness, discovering it in oneself. The Jnani discovers happiness in oneself. He is not looking for any external person, thing, object to satisfy his needs. Right? Very, very important aspect. This wave and ocean example is a very important example which is cited in Vedanta in several texts. One of them is wave and ocean. The other famous example is pot and clay. In fact, in Panchadashi, so much has been discussed about pot and clay. Clay being essentially the substance behind pot, and pot is just a nama rupa. Right? So, coming back to our verse, right? Yaha, the seeker, who veti, comes to know the nature of Paramatma and the Janma Karma Cha Divyam, as well as the truth behind the Paramatma Avatara, right? So, such a person is really blessed. See, because now, why do we call actually Bhagavan's activity as divine? Divyam means divine, right? Because it is meant for the protection of Dharma and destruction of Adharma. We saw in Parisranaya Sadhunam, right? So, normally we refer to this as Ishwara Leela, right? So, that's the one, the Jnani, who knows Bhagavan's nature and Bhagavan's avataram, he will become liberated even while living. This is called Jivan Muktihi. So, according to Vedanta, liberation does not require going to any loka. Look at the departure now. This is Advaitam. Okay? In Advaitic philosophy, we don't need to go to Vaikuntha loka, Shiva loka, none of these. Right? Jeevan Mukti is here and now. So according to Vedanta, we don't have to go to the forest, to ashramas, anywhere, right? You can live in the city and pursue this knowledge and discover Ekatma and through that discover peace, security and happiness. Swamiji compares it to the eye of the cyclone, which is absolutely peaceful. Whereas all around the cyclone, you have so much of turbulence, right? So Jnani discovers inner calm in spite of situations around him. This is called Jeevan Muktihi. Now, having enjoyed Jeevan Muktihi while living, this part is not covered in the shloka, okay? At the time of death, what happens? After enjoying the life of Jeevan Muktihi, Deham Tyaktva, they drop the physical body without any protest, right? And Jnani uses the body, takes care of the body as a trustee, but Jnani is intensely aware of the fact that I am not the owner, I am only the user, right? And Bhagavan has gifted this body. So at the end of it, after his death, the Jnani attains what we call as Videha Mukti, because he is no longer attached to his body or the karma. He is so detached, so there is no fresh karma and his prarabdha karma has got exhausted as part of the life and there is the sanchita karma gets burned. This is what Vedanta says, that Jnani will attain Videha Mukti after the prarabdha karma is exhausted. While living, he enjoys Jeevan Muktihi. So, punaha janma naiti, that is what it says, right? Now, a very important subtle point given here is, the Jnani uses the body, takes care of the body and then has to return the body. Now, a very important point, but a side point is, now, based on this, we can make some corollary here. Now, because God has given us this body for the exhaustion of the papa punyam, it is like leasing a house, right, and paying off. So, the karma dollars is with which we exhaust our karma during this lifetime. So, the body is a gift of God. We are expected to return the body with care. So, I don't want to say what is right or wrong, but you may extrapolate it to what Vedanta and the scriptures talk about donating organs or donating the body. It's like literally like leasing a house and then giving the house away to somebody else. You are not actually the owner of the house. Right? So, I'm not saying what is right wrong because I'm not the person to be commenting about that, but this is the view of the Shastras and Veda. Okay, so I talked about how the Sanchita Karma is burnt and no Agami Karma or fresh karma is accumulated, right? Now, after merging into the ocean, right, do the rivers have a name, right? Ganga merges into ocean, you can't make out Ganga, right? Yamuna merges, you can't make out. So, similarly, Shankaracharya merges into Ishvara, he is Ishvara, that's all, right? Very, very important. So, with Jeevan Mukti, the Jnani enjoys twofold benefit. Jeevan Mukti, peace, security and happiness while living, and merger into the Lord, called merger, okay? Within double quotes, Videha Mukti, after death, right? This is Ishvara Jnana Phalam. By knowing Ishvara, by knowing the reality or truth behind Ishvara, this is the benefit. So, O Arjuna, he who thus knows my divine birth and action does not take another birth after giving up the body. He attains me capital, that is Brahman Atma. Okay. Continuing, Vitaragabhayakrodah. Manmaya mamupashritah. Bahavo jnana tapasa. Pootamadbhava magatah. భూతామద్భావమాగతాః. సో సిన్స్ ఏకాత్మ దర్శనం ఇస్ ప్రాక్టికలీ యూస్ఫుల్ రైట్, సో వాట్ ఇస్ పీపుల్ ఆస్క్ జనరలీ రైట్, వై డూ వీ స్టడీ గీత రైట్. సో గీత ఇస్ మెంట్ అల్టిమేట్లీ ఫార్ వాట్, ఫర్ ఏకాత్మ దర్శనం. ప్రాక్టికల్ యూటిలిటీ ఆఫ్ గీత ఏకాత్మ దర్శనం ఇస్ ఇట్ గివ్స్ మీ పీస్ సెక్యూరిటీ అండ్ హ్యాపీనెస్ వితౌట్ డిపెండింగ్ అపాన్ ఎక్స్టర్నల్ అండ్ అన్ప్రెడిక్టబుల్ ఫ్యాక్టర్స్ రైట్. నౌ సిన్స్ ఏకాత్మ దర్శనం ఇస్ అ వర్తి గోల్ రైట్, ది క్వశ్చన్ ఇస్ హౌ టు గో అబౌట్ డూయింగ్ ఇట్ రైట్. సో కృష్ణ విజువలైజెస్ అర్జునాస్ క్వశ్చన్ రైట్. సో కృష్ణ హింసెల్ఫ్ గివ్స్ అ ఏకాత్మ దర్శనం స్కీమ్ రైట్, అ స్పిరిచువల్ జిమ్ యాజ్ స్వామిజీ కాల్స్ ఇట్ రైట్. ఐ లైక్ ది టర్మ్ హి సేస్ స్పిరిచువల్ జిమ్ విత్ సెవెరల్ ఎక్విప్మెంట్ అండ్ విత్ అ గురు. వై సెవెరల్? బికాస్ డిఫరెంట్ ఎక్విప్మెంట్ ఆర్ మెంట్ ఫర్ టర్నింగ్ ఫర్ ట్రీటింగ్ డిఫరెంట్ ఆస్పెక్ట్స్ ఆఫ్ అవర్ హెల్త్ రైట్. వన్ ఫర్ హ్యాండ్, అనదర్ ఫర్ లెగ్. వాట్ బెనిఫిట్ hand will get, that leg will not get, and both may not benefit the back right. We have a gym with exercises and a guru to guide right. So this is a spiritual gymnasium. So different exercises are indicated here. What is the first one? Manmaya. May the desire for this particular goal first take your mind. First of all, you have to decide to sign up in a gym and do your exercise to achieve the goal right. So may the desire for this particular goal take your mind. May your mind be possessed with this intense desire. Because to accomplish anything in life, I should have a desire to accomplish. Right? If you have to work for money, you should have love for money. Right? So minimum you should, you know, and if you want to lose weight, you should have, you should believe that you want to lose weight and you want to look good. Right? So may you be first fired with this enthusiasm or aspiration for Ishvara Jnanam and Ishvara Prapti. So Krishna calls it Manmaya. May you be obsessed with this goal. Then second is Mam Upashrita. There are so many unseen and seen obstacles in any accomplishment, right? We want to go, first of all in the morning we don't even want to get up and go to the gym, right? Because we want to sleep extra half an hour. Or we are about to leave, somebody comes. So many things can happen, right? So we may be genuinely aspiring. So in spirituality also, we can have several unseen and seen obstacles, which is also because of our Purva Janma Papam, right? It can be in the form of Purva Janma Papam. So may you surrender to the Lord and seek help to be free from these unseen obstacles. So Ishvara Sharanagati is important, right? Mamupashrita, O Lord, remove the unseen obstacles, right? Very important. And now this knowledge is very different, unlike the gym example that we gave, right? Here it is knowledge first of all, and it has to take place in the mind. So refinement of the mind is very, very important. Mind becomes extremely important, preparing the ground before forming or sowing the seed, right? Very similar to that, we need to make sure that the mind is ready to absorb the knowledge. Now here, Krishna assumes that all Gita students have already acquired that. Right? Poor Krishna doesn't know our mind, right? That we have lot of unhealthy vasanas or tendencies, etc. But however, later on, Krishna will clarify. He'll give you a list of Daivi Sampat and Asuri Sampat. But I always used to wonder why in the order it comes much later, right? So Krishna for some reason has positioned it much later, Daivi Sampat and Asuri Sampat. We will study about it later, right? So this verse is, having resorted to me, many people who are free from attachment, fear and anger, who are absorbed in me and who are purified by Jnana Yoga have attained my nature, right? Now, in this specifically, Krishna is speaking about three stages of spiritual journey, right? So, here Krishna is emphasizing on that. First of all, we saw about developing a desire for spiritual goal, and we also saw surrendering to the God, and then we spoke about refining the mind. So what is Krishna specifically looking at with respect to refining the mind, right? So first of all, he's saying, drop your attachment or ownership, right? And he says, for mental refinement, how do you test, right, whether you are progressing or not, right? How you need some way of checking. He says it is through raga, bhaya and krodha, right? We saw this even earlier, right? So may you reduce attachment to external things and people by remembering that I am not the owner of anything, nor do I have control over anything. Dropping ownership, controllership, right? I cannot own or control our children. After a particular time, they themselves grow out, right? So you cannot be controlling. So you can watch your mind, whether you are bhaya, fear, krodh, anger and attachment, right? Is it coming down or not through the various, you know, the karma yoga that you do, upasana yoga that you do, etc., right? And the measure is directly proportional to the attachment that you have, right? Because attachment is a powerful emotion. So one is bhayam, right? The more I'm attached to something, I always fear that what will happen to that object of attachment or what will happen to the person I am attached to. That person regularly comes back at 6 p.m., doesn't come back at 6 p.m., you start getting extremely worried. So greater the attachment, greater the bhayam, right? So if I'm reducing attachment and I'm surrendering to God, when I don't know the reason why a person is late, I don't want to project anything. I just surrender to the Lord, right? So this is one indication, right? So for some people, attachment does not produce fear. They don't have fear problem. But for them, it creates another equally powerful emotion, which is krodha. Kama esha krodha esha. We saw that, right? Now, I want, there are many patriarchs like that. I want every family member to do exactly as I want them to do, right? Because my conclusion is, I know what is best for everybody, right? We have that. The person, the father may be having sadabhishekam, the son may be having shashyapta purti, but still the father may be feeling that I know all best. So this is another form of controlling, attachment, which can lead to krodha because anger and desperation because people don't listen, right? So that this is another difference, right? Raga generates either fear or anger. Now spiritual growth means reduction of all these three gradually. Now we saw this earlier, FIR reduction, right? Frequency of the emotional disturbance, intensity and recovery period after a bhayam attack, after a krodha attack, any of the emotions you can extend this, right? So that is your way of measuring, right? There are lots of families where, you know, the husband beats the wife, beats the children. So such people can see drastic reduction if they are sincerely working on karma yoga and upasana yoga. Maybe some are relatively sattvic already, but even then you can see the FIR reduction, right? So Krishna says, start working on it. This is the first spiritual step. Any amount of sahasranamam, parayanam, rudrabhishegam, all of these is okay, but are you able to handle fear and anger? That is why I think I mentioned even earlier, Swamiji recommends maintaining a Vedantic diary to see how often you are actually responding, reacting violently rather than responding calmly, right? So, and also another thing is, first, it can be verbal, it can be physical, or it can be mental. So these are also different levels of reactions, right? Now, self-restraint. So even a first step is withdrawing from physical and verbal into mind, because self-restraint itself indicates spiritual maturity, self-mastery, right? So spirituality requires this mental refinement. Entire karma yoga, puja, prarthana, all of them should result in this. as you do more and more of Nishkama Puja, your mind will get automatically refined. What is the difference between Sakama and Nishkama Karma? Sakama Karma is selfish motive for puja, etc. Nishkama Karma is for the benefit of the loka. Loka samasta sukino bhavantu. Right? So, the mind, when it is refined, finally, then you are ready for the inquiry. And that Krishna calls it jnana tapasa. You enter into jnanam. Consistent, systematic study of Bhagavad Gita for a length of time under the guidance of a live and competent guru. Right? So, raga, bhaya, krodha. Remember all this. These three are very, very important. And along with that, Gita study. Attachment, fear, anger, and mental refinement, and then follow it up with Gita study. And through what? Gita study is done through Shravanam, Mananam, and Nididhyasanam, right? And our mind will say, all these are actually too idealistic, I don't know, right? The diffidence will be there. So, one quick way of checking, right? Swamiji has added another expression to FIR, which is CCC. There will be increase in CCC. What is CCC? Cheerfulness, confidence, and calmness, right? I'm generally calm, then you will become cheerful, right? And you can also have more confidence, right? So, whatever pursuit I go after, I can succeed. This is also very important for spiritual journey because you should not develop diffidence, right? Very, very important. So, many people after this will feel the difference in terms of CCC, right? Important point. Continuing with the verse 11.
Eyatamam prapadyante, eyatamam prapadyante, tansataiva bhajamyaham, tansataiva bhajamyaham, mama vartmanu vartante, mama vartmanu vartante, manushya partha sarvashah, partha sarvashah.
Just one second, I need to check something. Okay. So, in these verses, Krishna talks about bhakti and bhaktaha, right? Another very important topic. So, which will be more elaborately discussed in later chapters because we have chapters on Bhakti Yoga. But he briefly introduces us to this topic. Bhakti is nothing but accepting the existence of Ishvara and trying to relate to Bhagavan. Just as I have got varieties of worldly relationships, like I have children, grandparents, spouse, friends, neighbors, etc. Right? I need to also nurture these relationships. Similarly, when I get introduced, right, first is accepting God's existence, and then I have to nourish the relationship. That is bhakti. Initially, I strike the relationship by accepting the existence of God, like the wave accepting the existence of ocean. How does the wave accept? Imagining that wave is a living being, the wave understands, right? And I am born out of the ocean. And I am sustained by the ocean. And in the end, I will merge into the ocean. Similarly, my relationship with God is, all of us, including me, have born out of Ishvara. We are all sustained by Ishvara. And in the end, we will go back to Ishvara. So, this minimum understanding of Ishvara as the creator of everyone and striking a relationship and nourishing the relationship by various devotional exercises. So, how do I retain relationship and nourish? Now, if you have a friend, what would you do? You will call him regularly, talk to him, send him a card, right? And then you preserve and nourish this, right? So, in the case of Ishvara, this is called bhakti, right? So a person who values this relationship and who is involved in devotional exercises is called Bhaktaha. He will utilize bhakti for various types of benefits, just as we also utilize our relationship for various types of benefits. Just like we utilize our friendship, our relationship for various benefits, types of benefits, we can use the relationship with God to get different types of benefits. Note this, right? Very, very important point, right? So, based on whatever is given in the 7th chapter of the Gita, Krishna will divide, actually in the 7th chapter, Krishna will divide bhaktas into 4 categories, right? We will see who are these bhaktas and who and what kind of bhakti each one is, right? And what is the kind of motivation. Here we are only going to see briefly 4 types of bhakti. The first type of bhakti Lord Krishna talks about is artha bhaktaha, who wants to use bhakti to solve his problems in life. Personal problems, family problems, professional problems, etc. I utilize bhakti. I go to a temple and I invoke Bhagavan and I tell him, oh Lord, I am having a problem. Somehow help me. Right? Please help me get out of this problem. And there is also a commercial bhakti. I also strike a deal. If you solve my problem, I will do such a thing. I will break 100 coconuts. I'll go around you 108 times. Right? All kinds of negotiations. Right? So we've got an endless list and we go after that. That is artha bhakti. The second bhakti Krishna calls is artharti bhakti. Right? This is used before all my ventures in life. Slightly better than the first one. First one, there is a direct negotiation. You do this, I will do this. Right? You get my daughter married, I will come 7 weeks here. You do something else. What, get me visa, I will come to Visa Balaji temple. Right? Or that kind of bhakti is artha bhakti. Now, the second bhakti is called artharti bhakti. This is used before all my ventures in life. Business venture, family ventures, right? So, before I undertake an important activity and I desperately want the activity to succeed, I go to the temple and request loudly. I want success and success only. I cannot imagine a failure. I want only success in my ventures. So, I utilize this bhakti which is called artharti bhakti. Okay, first one is artha bhakti, second is artharti bhakti. So artha here referring to the success in anything including the examinations, right? You keep the pen, etc. and come. Artharti bhakti also starts from very young age, right? But very important, both these bhaktis. And here I wanted to make a point because as a grihastha and as a parent and as a person in corporate life and having seen neighbors, I think it is very, very critical to make sure the children at least have artha and artharti bhakti. We are not talking of other bhakti for children. Because for them, it doesn't matter. They need a relationship with God that becomes very, very critical. Because in this day and age, the children start having difference of opinion with parents in adolescent stage, and in the absence of somebody close to whom to go to and share their problems, it's absolutely important that we inculcate artha bhakti and artharti bhakti. It doesn't matter. We don't have to feel guilty about it at this stage. Krishna himself will tell, actually, if you see. Right? It is very, very important to note that. That's why I thought I must mention this. The third bhakti is called jignyasu bhakti. Right? A person who is wanting to use this bhakti for spiritual growth. Right? I want sadhana chatushtyam. Jnana vairagya siddhyartham. Right? Some rare people will have Gita chanting and other things and pray for sadhana chatushtyam or jnana vairagya siddhyartham or jnana nishtha praptyartham. Those kind of sankalpas are very, very rare. In fact, the priests who come home will look at you very differently. So you do it inside your mind, right? So that is jignyasu bhakti, right? Very important, the third one. Now, the fourth level of Jignyasu Bhakti, and the fourth level of Bhakti is Jnani Bhakti. Right? Jnani Bhakti is a true Jnani, right? He is, you know, praying to God, or he is doing puja for Lokakshayamartam. We saw that. In fact, Lokakshayamartam is very, very important. Shankaracharyas in the mathas do elaborate pujas for this, right? That is the fourth category, or Jnani Bhakti, right? Now, very important point to note here is, now, you can use any of these bhaktis for encashing any kind of benefit. You must remember that. Krishna says, when a person is Artha Bhakta and Artharthi Bhakti, he is using bhakti for limited and finite gains in life. Because compared to spiritual fulfillment, all the worldly accomplishments are nothing, because they are subject to gain and loss. Right? So he says, Artha Bhakti and Artharthi Bhakti is underutilization for bhakti. Because if you can get moksha out of bhakti, it is best. It's like using sandalwood for cooking food, or getting Ganges water and using it for washing your clothes in the house. Exactly like that, right? If you have to use a correct example, very, very important. So, Artha Bhaktas and Artharthi Bhaktas are unintelligent Bhaktas, whereas Jignyasu Bhakta is one who uses Bhakti for spiritual growth. So, having said that, this much Krishna says, once you have understood these four forms of Bhakti, what type of Bhakti you want is your choice. You decide what you want, right? There is no hurry. I don't want to enforce any Bhakti. I want to educate you that there are four types of bhaktis, which is intelligent version, which is foolish version. I will not tell you. I'm only telling you the benefits. So with that, I'm sure you understand. And after the teaching, I am giving you the option. If you want to become Artha and Artharthi, then I will approach you and bless you appropriately. I'm not saying I won't bless you. If you choose a higher goal, I will bless you appropriately. My blessing will depend upon not my wish. It will depend upon your motive. Choice is not with Bhagavan, but choice is with the Bhakta. Therefore, Lord Krishna has a big complaint. Not only we. He also has complaints. What is that? 99% of the Bhaktas in the world will fall only under the mostly first two categories. And a very small percentage in Jignyasu Bhakta category, and Jnani Bhakti is a minuscule percentage, right? Very, very important. Now, practically nil, if you see the last category, which is the Jnani Bhakti. So, we are going to see in detail about these Bhaktis later. So, we will study about them in detail, right? So, this is the verse that we will be discussing in the 7th chapter. Chaturvidha bhajante maam jana sukritinor jana artho jignyasu artharthi jnani cha bharatarshabha. The exact reference of the four types of bhakta, right? So, what we'll do is, I will stop here, because if I get into the next verse, you know, we'll have a problem. And then I will go to discussion of the shariratrayam. So, yeah. So, let me complete the Purnamada first. Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavashishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Okay, I'm now going to quickly run through, the questions itself, okay? These were some of the questions that have come about. So after death, what happens to Sukshma Shariram? Where is the Karna Shariram while someone is alive? How Karna Shariram is related to Sukshma Shariram? And if we have Ishvara and Jiva, is it not Dvaita? I did explain in the last class itself. In the last Bhagavad Gita class, you had mentioned that a mother gives birth to Stula Shariram and Sukshma Shariram. Can you please elaborate the point? Doesn't the Sukshma Shariram and Karna Shariram pass on from Janma to Janma without alteration? We will see all of, we'll again revisit these questions at the end of the session. If Jiva is beginningless like Ishvara, and Jiva has a Karana Shariram that contains a bundle of Punya Papam generated by use or misuse of free will, and the number of Jivas is countless, where did these countless Jivas manifest from with varying degrees of Punya and Papam? And we'll go over all these questions again at the end, okay? So, now, quickly let us look at what Sharira Trayamam is about. Now, according to Vedanta, right, this is not what science talks about, right? According to Vedanta, we see that the body, right, the shariram is of three types or three kinds of shariams. One is the sthula shariram or the gross body, sukshma shariram or the subtle body, and karana shariram or the causal body, right? Now, in the gross body itself, if you take, okay, let us go slightly fast with gross body. Now, in each of these, we are going to be discussing four factors, which is the material out of which each is made. That is, Stula Shariram, Sukshma Shariram, Karna Shariram, components, function and nature of each one of them. Now, in the Stula Shariram, right, we won't spend too much time. This is exactly what science is talking about, the anatomy, physiology of the body, I should say anatomy of the body. And in Vedanta, it is talked about as Pancha Bhautikam. It is made out of the five elements, Akasha, Vayu, Agni, Jalam and Prithvi, right? So, the gross body or Stula Shariram is made of Pancha Bhutani, Stula Pancha Bhutani, right? Now, it has the body, head, hands and legs, nothing much to talk about the Stula Shariram. It is very obvious, right? And what are the functions? It is in the Vedantic terms, I'm not going to talk about the science aspect. In Vedantic terms, it's like a leased house, as I said. It's kind of, you get the body in the form, you get it because you have some prarabdha karma. So, the karma dollars is what gives you that body. And you are going to exhaust the prarabdha karma in that particular body. So, as long as the payments are not extinguished, you can remain there. Until it is not exhausted, then you have to vacate, right? And all transactions with the external world is done through the Stula Shariram, right? Very important. Now, the nature of the Stula Shariram is, it has birth, it grows, it will maintain, it will decay, it will perish, etc. over the lifetime of the body, which is known, and in the mother's womb, it is first in the form of the seed, so it's called the potential existence. In Sanskritam, these terms are very important. Asti, Jayate, Vardate, Viparinamate, Apakshiyate, Vinashyati. This has been dealt with in detail in Tattva Bodha. Okay? Then we move on to subtle body. Right? Now, in our Vedantic text, it is very important to note that there's a lot of importance given to Sukshma Shariram or subtle body. So, Sukshma Shariram is born out of the material, the raw material is Pancha Sukshma Bhutani. Sukshma means subtle. So, just like you have gross earth, gross agni, etc., there is Sukshmam form also. Okay? And there are 19 components divided this way. Pancha Jnanendriyani, 5 sense organs of knowledge. Pancha Karmendriyani, 5 organs of action, Pancha Pranadayaha, which is the five pranas, udana, samana, etc. And antakaranani, which is four, right? We'll see quickly. So, pancha jnanendriyani are, in simple terms, it's not the physical eye, physical ear, etc. It is the power behind eyes, ears, nose, tongue and skin. Because I want you to get this difference important. It's not something that's physically seen, but it's the power that we sense, right? So it is eye, ears, nose, tongue and skin referred to as indriyani, jnanendriyani, five organs of knowledge. Then the karmendriyani, which is organ of speech, moving, locomotion, excretion and reproduction. Then the five the pranas, which is prana, apana, vyana, udana, samana, which I think many of you will be familiar about, right? And then the four antakaranam, mind, intellect, memory and ego. There are four distinct faculties as depicted in our Vedantic text. Mind and intellect are different. Mind is the emotional faculty, whereas intellect is the rational faculty. Takes decision, right? Very important. And ego is the ahankara or self-reference, right? Now, the function and nature of sukshma shariram is all transactions are done by the sakya body. How the mind directs the eye, the mind directs the ears, etc. And through that we hear, we see, etc. And the nature is, it is subject to change. And the life, so for those of you who ask this question, is up to pralayam, right? It is up to pralayam. But in the human body, when the child takes birth, obviously when the sense organs are, the physical organs called golakams are developing, the power, the sukshma shariram gets manifested in the form of power. Just to clarify my statement, right? So in case you had doubts, so the sukshma shariram will get manifested through the child's body. But the sukshma shariram by itself is from pralayam to pralayam, right? And only I can see, sense or feel it, right? So this is a small aspect on why I don't remember anything from the previous birth. It is just that it's all there in the memory. It's exactly like even now we don't remember a lot of things. There are prodigies who remember and who are able to build completely on their previous janma. They have already learned music. They are great singers at the age of two. We see that, right? There are prodigies like that. So we discussed that also. Then coming to the Karana Shariram, the third Shariram, the raw material is the causal matter. It's called avidya or maya or prakriti, right? Now, the components of the Karana Shariram, in a way, not exactly, it's Stula Shariram and Sukshma Shariram in potential form. Not Stula and Sukshma Shariram directly. In a potential form, they are found in Karana Shariram. So, like the something like a DNA, not exactly a DNA, okay? I don't want to use any science term. It's in potential form, right? And the function is, it is kind of a receptacle from which the gross body and subtle body will emanate. Especially the sukshma shariram after pralayam when the creation starts, right? And nature is, it will not be destroyed during pralayam also. Only with moksha and liberation will karana shariram be destroyed. Karana shariram will never be destroyed. That is why when we say jiva and ishvara are anadi, we are referring to this. The karana shariram and karana prapancham are anadi. So they will at least be in potential form during pralayam, right? Other times they will manifest. Now I also have a table here, right, which gives you the whole thing in a, one second. Oh, I didn't realize that it was not, one second. Why did it not move? Sorry, just one second. I'm having some problem with the slide. Okay. So there is a slide which compares all the different shariram's, right? And it is already there. You can take a look at it in the introduction to Vedanta class. And one other point I'll complete before I take questions. So So if you see this, now Atma, the consciousness, will reflect in each one of these, okay? So what happens is, when it reflects in the gross body, right, there is one kind of reflection. When it reflects in the sakhi body, there is another reflection. Or in the case of causal body, there is another reflection. How the way we talk about it is, consciousness associated with the gross body is called Vishwa. Consciousness associated with the subtle body is called Tejasa. And consciousness associated with the causal body is called Prajna. Basically, it's the same Atma or consciousness which is reflecting in the different bodies. Since I only sort of presented to you the key slides, I'm not getting into the details again. So I just wanted to make sure that, you know, I have clarified this, and people who ask these questions, if you now have anything specific, please definitely ask. So if you want to put up your hands, I can see them now. Yeah, Mohana. Mohana.
Namaskara. I have a question about the organ donation. If you are the one, the remark you made has confused me so much. I believe in giving everything. That's what my mother has taught me, not to pamper my body, but to help. She always said, you will be
that
burnt.
Is why, correct. And that is the reason why I specifically mentioned that it's not... It's just left for each one of us to take the decision. But the way Vedanta puts it is, the body has been given to us in order to exhaust the prarabdha karma, and we are expected to give it back to the panchabhuta. This is what Veda and Vedanta say. Now things have changed. At that point in time, there was no danam. It was always only cremation. Nobody donated organs, etc. So today, when this question of donating organs comes, the saints or sannyasis will not be able to categorically say it's okay, not okay, because of these reasons. So each person will have to take that decision. That's all. Right? So you don't have to get worried about it. What I presented was the Vedantic view of how the body comes and how the body goes, that's all. Okay?
No, I have a question again. You know, you're saying, is it because the body, that if I am diseased and I have a liver problem, I'm not supposed to take a donation, I'm supposed to suffer and die because it's my prarabdha karma or whatever, or the person who is donating is giving the gift which God has given to somebody else. Is it that
exactly
way?
Correct. Yeah. So the let me take the argument both ways, right? Now, if I take the argument that I am not supposed to donate, then we will take the argument saying that this particular body was given for exhaustion of the prarabdha of X jiva. And ex jiva has exhausted the prarabdha, so it is his duty or the family's duty to return the body to back to the panchabhutas. This is position A. Position B that you could take is that no, this organ is going to be of help or benefit to another jiva, and this itself could have been part of a design of God's, you know, will and prarabdha, so it is perfectly okay to donate. You could take both these views. So I was trying to say that there is the view of the scriptures is this, that's all. Right? Okay. Neil? Neil? Okay, self-muted. You had a question here, Shiva?
Yeah.
Huh. Whoever knows my avatara will be a jnani, literally.
So what happened to the karma? Logical end of the karma, or we are taking a shortcut?
No. Whenever the statement is made that, okay, the question is on the particular verse on God realization. So when you realize God, you will become a jnani. Whenever we say when you realize God, you'll become a jnani or anything, it has to be extrapolated as you will attain jivan mukti, that is liberated while living, right? Which means that you will be detached from actions, etc., as a typical jnani would live. And after the exhaustion of the prarabdha karma, at the end of the life of this person, then he will attain videha mukti. Always, that is the standard interpretation. Okay. Now, are there any more questions from anybody else? Yeah. Ramaya.
Namaste.
Namaste.
Your comparison of Jivatma with wave and
ocean.
So when the wave gets merged into ocean, it becomes water, or it is water only. It doesn't maintain any individuality there, right?
Correct.
So is that, will there be no individuality for Jivatmas?
Very good question. Yeah, very good question. The question is, I'm repeating for the benefit of others. When the wave merges into the ocean, there is no individuality left in the wave, right? So, is that true for human beings, liberated souls? Yes. What we refer to as no individuality is, you will see many paragraphs, many verses coming in Gita, right, where Krishna will say, I am doing action without doing action, right? I am listening, Pashyan, Shrunvan, Jigran, everything, but Naiva Kinchit Karomi. I am not doing any of these. So, in all of these verses, what is being referred to constantly is, I am doing without attachment. So, I am a Karta without attachment, I am a Bhokta without attachment. So, I am not called Karta or Bhokta, right? I am in and through all of the actions, right? But I am doing the karma without attachment. That is important to note. That is the loss of individuality. Right? For transactions like, you know, day-to-day activities, work, everything, the jnani is the same as any other person. Right?
So, what is the meaning of rebirth? Whether it is the causal body or the sukshma sariram, what it is?
I'll speak about this. Now, rebirth is not there in the case of jnani, first of all. So, I am assuming that your question is not towards jnani, but it's towards others, ajnani. Can I assume that?
No. If you say that, if there is no, even a jnani takes his birth again with his own will, right?
No. A jnani does not take rebirth at all. Jnani will exhaust the prarabdha karma as a jivan mukta, and at, this is what Vedanta says, right? And at the end of the prarabdha karma exhaustion, which is this particular life, he or she will attain videha mukti, and the meaning of videha mukti is sanchita karma will be burnt, which is all the past karma that he carried, for several janmas, and there will be no agami karma because he has not pursued any action with I, ahankara, and he has exhausted all the prarabdha. Therefore, the equations are all gone and there is no further janma at all for a jnani.
Is it? So,
yes,
it is like merging into ocean.
Exactly. After, at the end of life, that's what I spoke about. We don't talk of Ganga in the ocean after that. Similarly, we don't talk of Shankaracharya separately in Ishvara after that. He is Ishvara.
So he cannot reappear as Shankaracharya.
Remember one thing. This is even before this I spoke about. Ishvara avatara can be in any form. He can be your friend. Ishvara can come as your friend, can come as someone on the road, can come as Shankaracharya again, can come as Rama again. We hear, I don't know whether it is true, but my father, when he used to live, used to talk about it, that there is this Kodandaramar temple in near that Madurantakam lake. Apparently, there was a young Britisher, okay, who was there. And he saw when the lake was going to, it was flooded and it was going to break open and the water was going to come into the city. He saw Rama Lakshmana with the bow and arrow on the banks of that lake.
Ah.
Erikatha Ramar. The name of the god is Erikatha Ramar. So therefore, Ishvara can appear as Shankaracharya.
Thank you. Thank you. Wonderful explanation, madam. Wonderful.
Thank you.
I was under confusion that, So if I see another Shankaracharya, it is God. It is not.
Yes, it is God.
Shankaracharya.
Correct. Absolutely.
Thank you.
You could have a darshan of any God. That's what I said. I never question that because there are a few people, the way they talk about their experience of seeing God, who are we to pass judgment? Right? So, right. And this from a Britisher, that too. Right? Mm-hmm. So, good. Anyway.
Yeah.
Let me see if it's anybody.
My doubt is cleared.
Very nice. One second. Anybody else has any questions? And those of you who had sent me the notes, the questions. Prabha? Prabha, you're self-muted. Okay, there's no. Prabha, you can speak. Happening. Neil?
Namaste, madam.
No, namaste.
I had a question about the Janma Karma Me Divyam Shloka. So,
okay.
It seems to point towards the God realization, but as you spoke, God realization and self realization are the same, right? Does it also point towards the self realization then?
Here it is God realization. Because it's talking about my divine birth. If you see specifically, the verse 9 speaks about divine birth. But as I told you in the previous class, it's an equation where, you know, you strike out realization and say self equals God, basically. Right? So it is Jivatma, Paramatma, Aikyam that I was speaking about because the same kind of verse appears with self earlier and now it's coming with God. That's all. Here it is God realization.
Okay. Thank you, madam. Okay. I have one question. Can you also briefly summarize what is Jnani Bhakti? I kind of missed that.
Oh, okay. The Jnani Bhakti, because I had covered earlier in detail, I didn't get into detail. A Jnani Bhakti, Bhakta is one who is generally all Jnanis. They perform pujas, they pray to God, one for the sake of the world, like, that is one. And second, to also serve as role models in the society. For example, Sringeri Shankaracharya or any Matadipati, they spend hours actually doing pujas, Chandramaudishwara puja, etc. So, Jnani Bhakti, Bhaktas are those Jnanis who are praying to God for the benefit of the world.
Oh, okay. Thank you, madam. Very clear now.
Vinu?
Ma'am, thank you very much for this knowledge sharing, ma'am. I'm seeing this slide here right now, and I'm just still having the question, how the causal body, subtle body, and gross body are related. My question is, I have a gross body right now. Do I have a subtle body with me right now? Or do I have...
Okay. I will explain this. Basically, I did cover this in detail in the introduction to Vedanta, but good that you asked me so that I will cover it quickly. Yeah. The question is about the relationship between the causal body, subtle body, and the gross body. In our life, at the time of birth, right, the gross body comes from the mother and the father, and at that time, when the body, the jiva, is appearing, the subtle body manifests in the jiva. Okay? And the karana shariram is anyway the complete imprint of our papa punya karma accumulated over so many years in potential form, it is present in the karana shariram. So you assume, I don't want to give you a depiction because what happens is we go back with that imagination in our mind, but it is all the three shariram's are part of our shariram. Today, if we are walking, all of them are part of us, okay? And at the time of death, what happens is, the sukshma shariram, okay, it's very important to note, leaves the body along with the reflected consciousness that you see here. It is referred to as chidabhasa. So, reflected consciousness, because original consciousness is always there in the world. It is all pervading. So, what leaves at the time of death, according to Hinduism, right, according to Advaita Vedanta and also Hinduism in general, is the Sukshma Shariram along with Karna Shariram is included in Sukshma Shariram and Chidabhasa. That is why it carries all the memories and ghosts. So, death is defined as the disembodiment of Sukshma Karana Shariram and Chidabhasa. I think now you will be able to relate.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Anybody else? Just trying to see if anybody else has a question. Prabha?
Yeah. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Yeah. See, my question is, you mentioned even in the last class about, you know, plants and animals and, you know, jiva within them. But they do not have a free will. But if they don't have free will, how are they going to accumulate papa and punya, and when will they get liberated?
Okay. Now, very, very, very important question. This question is on plants and animals. If they do not have free will, when will they accumulate fresh papa or punya, or when will they even exhaust? Very important point, you've got it right. Plants and animals do not have free will, and therefore they will not accumulate any fresh agami karma. Remember that they have sanchita karma, which has been accumulated over several multiple janmas. They already have that sanchita karma. From that sanchita karma, a portion of the fructifying karma called prarabdha karma has resulted in their taking a birth as a dog or a cat or an octopus or a plant. So they will exhaust that prarabdha karma, both papam and punyam, in that particular jiva, in that particular animal sharira or plant sharira, until it is there. After that, depending on what is the next set of sanchita karma that is fructifying as prarabdha karma, the birth could be either a lower janma as bacteria, or it can be a superior janma as human or deva or anybody. Are you able to understand?
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. I think everybody has... So, Manushya Janma is that one and only species through which you can have liberation. There are other options, which is go to Brahma Loka and have Brahma as your teacher, and possibility of attaining liberation is there. But It's all possibility. You can go to Swargaloka, you will have an opportunity for a better teacher, but no guarantees. The guarantee is here only as a manushya. Very, very important.
Swargaloka cannot directly have
no. Right? And once again, let me see if there are any questions in the chat. Okay, there is something here. One second. Shiva Manasa Puja, please. This has been put up already. So you can take Shiva Manasa Puja from the site. We have uploaded it. If it's not there, I'll check once again. And the chanting is also there to the best of my knowledge. I'll confirm it again. Then there's another question on who is responsible for pralayam, Lord Shiva or natural disintegration. Pralayam will happen when the consolidated set of karmas have got exhausted and everything is going back into the Karana Shariram. It is all perfectly timed depending on Brahma's day, as we discussed, and night, and then they will all come together in the form of dissolution, right? How it happens? One tsunami, one earthquake is more than enough for God, like swatting the mosquitoes is enough. Okay? So this was the question. And I think I've covered everybody's. So if continue to send me questions, and I will try and logically group them and start responding, because sometimes many questions together I can answer in one set of slides. Huh? So thank you very much. Dhanyavada. We'll meet next week.